Victoria here, Girl Boss's senior writer and podcast producer. Because we're a small team at Girl Boss, my job requires me to be design savvy. But I confess, I have basically no design background. So what's a girl to do? Enter my lifesaver, Adobe Express, the AI content creation app that has truly become my creative sidekick. With hundreds of easy-to-use features and templates, creating stunning visual content is quicker and easier than ever. And now I can use the Adobe Express mobile app equipped with Adobe Firefly Generative AI to work on the go. It's like having a creative assistant in my pocket. Take this podcast, for example. I need to download clips for this episode and prepare them for our social media specialist so she can post on Reels and TikTok. In the past, this task would have been a daunting one, requiring hours of editing. But thanks to Adobe Express, it's become a breeze. I upload the clips to the video editor and get to work. With just a few clicks, I can trim, adjust, and fine-tune each clip using the easy-to-use interface and use generative AI to add the captions. The best part? I can do all of this from my phone, anytime, anywhere. I have all the tools I need right at my fingertips. That's just one example of the many ways Adobe Express has helped me level up my workday. Discover all of the creative possibilities at adobe.com/express. That's adobe.com/express. Or head to your app store to download today.
Hey, it's Avery, the host of Girl Boss Radio, and I'm also the founder and CEO of Bloom, an HR and DEI consulting firm. So today's guest, Elaine Welteroth, is a bit of a Girl Boss legend. She was a speaker at our Girl Boss Rally conference for 2 years in a row and has been a guest on Girl Boss Radio. We've been huge champions of Elaine's career since her days at Teen Vogue, when she became the editor-in-chief at just 29 years old, the youngest in Condé Nast's history. And since then, she's gone on to write New York Times best-selling memoir, More Than Enough, and teach a course with Masterclass about designing your dream career. I'm so excited to have Elaine on the pod once again to talk about her latest venture, Birth Fund, a nonprofit that supports families in the U.S. who can't afford the out-of-pocket costs of midwifery care. And she launched it with none other than tennis legend Serena Williams. As always, I'm joined with Liz, Girl Boss's general manager, and Victoria, Girl Boss's senior writer, to chat about this episode.
Obviously, as a journalist myself, Elaine's career is such an inspiration. She's pivoted to be a true multi-hyphenate. Her influence and ability to get buy-in is incredible. And obviously, back in the day, you'd be an editor-in-chief at a magazine your entire life and career. That's just how you would be known. But Elaine is really reinventing herself over and over again as a TV host, an author, and now a nonprofit founder. And she's building in a million different directions. And that's honestly something that I would love to do one day.
Yeah. And something that Avery, you asked Elaine on this episode is, did you think you would be doing this or something along those lines? And she said that if you asked her 3 years ago, she would have never thought this was going to be her next passion project. And I think that's such an important takeaway, is that you never know where your next big idea or big project or launch that you want to create will come from. 3 years from now, it could be something that's not even on your radar. And as you go through life and experience new things or get exposed to different experiences, it could inspire action. And yes, she launched it with Serena Williams, which is a big deal. But the reality is, it started as an Instagram fundraiser on Elaine's birthday. It started really small. And I think it's a really good reminder that small things become big things.
And she was able to get Ashley Graham, Kelly Rowland, Ayesha Curry, Chrissy Teigen, and John Legend on board too. Her influence, I honestly was like, that is wild. That's amazing.
What I think she's been really good at through her whole career, and this is something a mentor of mine told me the other week, is as a leader, as a person that wants to do things, your job ultimately is to find the truth in any situation. And so what is the truth with, where did Birth Fund come from? What is the truth that Elaine uncovered? The CDC reports that Black women are 3 times more likely to die during and after childbirth than white women. America's maternal mortality rate is 10 times higher than other high-income countries. How wild is that? And the other truth is, and Elaine shares this, that even as a high-income, privileged woman herself who comes from a wealthier socioeconomic background, she still couldn't get access to positive and affirming maternal care. Those are all the things that made Birth Fund a reality, and a viable reality at that.
The first time I realized that the birthing experience for women wasn't a safe and affirming experience was when I saw Serena Williams' documentary, and I was shocked that she had to work so hard to advocate for herself. And I don't think a lot of people know that had Serena Williams not advocated for herself, she likely would have died during childbirth. And I think it's something that shocks people that someone like Serena Williams, who is an absolute athletic powerhouse, one of the most iconic athletes in the world, was giving birth to her first child and really struggled through that They weren't affirming her and her experiences. So as such, she had to advocate so hard for herself. And had she not, she would be dead.
And then you have on the other side, someone like Nara Smith, shout out to our Treadwife episode, who recently was very open and very vulnerable about her experience giving birth at home using a midwife. And I think it's helping put those kinds of conversations at the forefront. So even if you're not thinking about having children or that's not something that's on your radar, this is an actual health crisis that so many people are facing. And unfortunately, just given the state of the world and the healthcare industry and these systemic issues that are so entrenched, it is going to take people like Elaine Welteroth to bring attention to this cause with the help of these big celebrity names to raise awareness, but also raise real money. Like at that birthday fundraiser I mentioned, they raised $16,000 in 16 hours, which was enough to put two families through birth care that they needed to access. So it's a powerful thing that she's doing. And the fact that it's just one of the amazing things in her career on her resume is just so incredible.
And one thing that I wanted to share too that you both had mentioned earlier is the pivots, the shifts. I've never really identified with this concept of stay in your lane and mind your business, because I think that that's a way that people encourage women to stay small in their careers. I think that Elaine is a really great example of someone that has, and we did an episode about this two seasons ago, where it's like, you can be multi-hyphenate, you can design the career of your dreams, and you can evolve and grow as your career does. If anything, as you listen to this episode, not only will it be inspiring for you to understand and learn more about this massive health crisis that's happening and impacting women every single day, but also the opportunity that you have to perhaps explore other things that you're really passionate about to have that next second life or that next career move that you're maybe really, really itching for right now.
Yeah. And also, I mean, Victoria and I both work in media. So this is just a really great testament to anybody else that's a media person or a marketing person about how these kinds of jobs can really position you to do just about anything. Elaine talks about using her connections from her magazine days to find corporate sponsors for Birth Fund. The role you're in now may not be the role you're in 3, 5, 10 years from now, but those relationships that you're building and those skills that you're gaining, those will probably stay with you for a good long time.
I think that's an amazing lens to listen through this episode for. And I think that applies to basically any single person, regardless of what career you're in. So with that, let's get into the episode. Hello, Elaine. Welcome to Girl Boss Radio. I am so excited to have this conversation with you today. And I wanted to start by congratulating you on the launch of Birth Fund.
Thank you so much.
It's amazing. So what has been the most surprising piece of feedback you've had since launching?
Honestly, the most surprising piece of feedback is that it's just all been positive, all positive. We were planning for a whole just-in-case crisis PR scenario because these days you just never know what could become controversial. Things that shouldn't be controversial become controversial. And we are just so elated by the unanimous support, and the fact that we haven't even seen one negative comment feels like a little bit of a miracle in 2024. So feels like a sign that we're doing something right and we're meeting the moment with something that really just makes sense to people. And to be honest with you, that's the biggest surprise, is just that it's all positive.
Yeah. I think for me, it was like, I had the Lizzo reaction. It's about damn time. Oh. Is so needed.
Yes.
Right? And I think that that's probably one of the reasons why you've just been overwhelmed with positive feedback, is just, it's such a needed initiative. So for folks that are listening that are unaware, what is Birth Fund?
Birth Fund is a coalition of families that are coming together in the wake of the maternal mortality crisis in this country, which P.S. a lot of people aren't even aware of. We're coming together because we're tired of hearing these sad stories about mothers losing their life during or after childbirth unnecessarily. We're tired of these scary statistics that are filling mothers and families with so much fear as they navigate pregnancy and childbirth. And we really believe that everyone deserves equal access to quality, dignified, respectful maternal health care in this country. And we really believe in midwifery care as a solution to the maternal mortality crisis. All of the data points to midwifery as a solution that we should be investing in. It's the reason why other high-income countries have much better birth outcomes than the U.S., and it's one of the reasons. And so for us, it just feels, like you said, it's about damn time that we rallied for resources to be redirected for families to have that kind of access to the care that they deserve and that they want, but don't always have the ability to afford those out-of-pocket costs. Because the thing to call attention to is that, and this is where the systemic change needs to come in America, midwifery care is not covered by most insurance companies, when again, in other high-income countries, it's the default form of birth care. So we really ultimately want to build towards systemic change, but we know we can't change laws and we can't change systems and structures if the community and the culture is not activated. And so this is a call to action that's really activating the community and connecting this crisis to the culture in a way that motivates people to be part of the change. And that's really, I think, what's resonating for people. It's a solution, not just a problem. We are living in a time that's full of problems that don't have easy solutions. And in this case, this is a complex problem that does have at least one solution that we can rally around. And it's also one that has tangible, immediate results. I'm not asking for people to pour money into this nonprofit that has a diffused set of priorities and objectives. We are stubbornly, singularly focused on creating real-time access for families to get the midwifery care that they deserve. And that means every dollar counts. If you have $5 or if you have $500,000, like some of our partners, we will use it in real time to hopefully change and save lives.
I have a bunch of questions, but I really want to start by asking you, what inspired you to start this?
My own lived experience as a pregnant person in this country, someone of means, someone with privilege, and it was still bad. I couldn't believe just how bad and just how broken the system was. I'm someone who was aware of the maternal mortality crisis in a peripheral sense. I'd heard the stats. I tried to look the other way and hope for the best. But when it was my turn, which is usually when we start to get activated around problems, is when it affects us, is when I really understood the urgency of the need for change and the need for more conversation about not only the problem with our maternal healthcare system, but the need to rally around solutions. So really, it was my lived experience. If you asked me literally 3 years ago, if I could have ever predicted that I'd be doing this kind of work, I would have said, absolutely not. I was so unacquainted with anything related to parenthood, motherhood, maternal healthcare was just nowhere, even in my lexicon. So for me, this is a passion project that's fueled by personal experience. And I felt compelled to use my platform and to use my storytelling ability that I've cultivated over many years as a journalist to really help get eyes and ears and hearts open around this issue. But very early on in my quote unquote advocacy journey, I felt really like it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough to just tell my story. It's not enough to raise awareness about a problem. You have to be part of building solutions and coming back to people with solutions. Because I do think this is one of those issues where when people hear about mothers dying at the rate that they are in this country, immediately you want to do something about it. The stats are staggering and people want to know what they can do to help. And for too long, we haven't really had an answer to that question. And so as a result, I think people tune it out and they go back to all the other bad news that's distracting us or scrolling on our Instagrams to just find a moment of reprieve. So I think it was important to really meet this moment with a solution because people finally do more than ever. We're talking about this finally. So I think it's important to galvanize people around what they can actually do. And so the idea came from that place of just wanting to help, wanting to give people a way to help. It was something that I sat with for a couple months. As with any big idea, you go through this internal processing phase of you go through your different phases, including doubt. Is this going to make a big enough difference? Are people going to get it? Are people going to care? And then my birthday came around in December, and I just got to that point where I was like, I don't know if you've ever felt this way before, but I was like, everything and anything that is put in me to do needs to come out of me. I can't hold it anymore. I just have to move on these things that have been put on my heart. And I feel like I'm standing in the way. I'm like blocking someone's blessing because of my own self-doubt. And that's silly. In the amount of time that I've had this idea and that I haven't acted on it, women have been giving birth without care that I could have helped cover. I could have helped get them the care that they needed. So I think there's that urgency to this work that pushed me to get out of my own way and to just start small with my own Instagram fundraiser on my birthday, which is really how the whole thing started. I just said, for my birthday, all I want to do is pay it forward. I want to cover the cost of care for a family in my neighborhood to have access to this kind of transformative birth care that I had that changed my life, that changed the trajectory of my pregnancy, that isn't covered by insurance. And if you guys want to participate, here's the link, you can join in. And then I like closed my phone and I went off and I enjoyed my birthday. And then I had a friend text me like, did you see you exceeded your goal already? And I was like, no way.
And how much did you raise?
We raised $16,000 in 16 hours.
Wow.
And that's without press, without any additional posts. That meant we were able to cover the cost of care for not just one family, but two families in real time, just like that.
Incredible.
And I thought, you know what? This is going to work. This is my proof of concept. Now, if I can do that with my digital community, what happens if I call on some of my friends who have way bigger platforms and they have their own money to invest in families? What if we make this a movement? We could scale this very simple one-to-one community support model overnight. And then what would happen if I called on some of the advertisers, those relationships with corporate partners that I've been cultivating since my magazine days, that I've been in business with personally since then? What if I come to them with this call to action? Then we can continue to scale this model really quickly. And so I just hit the ground running and I have not looked back since. And I created this very aggressive timeline, which I don't even know how we pulled off. But between December and April, Black Maternal Health Week, we built this thing from the ground up. And we have a full-on nonprofit that is up and running. And we birthed the thing. It's in the world now. And I can say the other thing that really surprised me is that everybody I asked to be a part of this said yes.
So I want to get to that because that's been probably one of the more overwhelmingly emotional parts of you launching this. And I think that there's a lot of people that are aware who one of your partners is, Serena Williams, but not a lot of people know about her traumatic birth story. A lot of people assume that the more privilege you have, that transcends and translates to better healthcare, which isn't the truth specifically for Black women. So I'd love for you to chat with us a little bit about the people that you've been able to partner with on this initiative.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to hear you say that most people don't know, because actually Serena's birth story that she shared in that epic documentary back in, I think, 2018 is what opened my eyes to the maternal health crisis and the realities and risks associated with giving birth in this country as a Black woman. But the picture isn't great for any of us. Do you know what I mean? And I think that was also a big part of what I wanted to change about the conversation around maternal health care and the maternal health crisis. For too long, I think it's been painted as a Black woman's problem or a poor person's problem. And I think that misses the point because, and it's also not true. I think it's time that we reframe the maternal health and the maternal mortality crisis conversation and make it more inclusive, because it's not just a Black woman's problem and it's not just a poor person's problem. We're talking about a system that's broken. And so it negatively impacts all of us in some way. And it just happens to disproportionately impact Black women. By the way, it's disproportionately impacting Black women at every socioeconomic level. It's not just poor Black women or uneducated Black women. That's a really big myth that we need to bust. So with the help of our funders, I think we are successfully able to start changing the conversation around this issue, which is going to really meet the moment and hopefully engage people in a new way. Serena was like my number one because she is the reason that I'm aware of the maternal health crisis. She is the reason that I'm aware that no matter what your privilege is in this country, you are still at risk of falling through the cracks of a broken maternal health system. After even becoming aware of this issue, I put the fear that it dredged up in the back of my mind, because I was like, oh, motherhood is so far off. And by then, yeah, I'm sure I'll be fine. And then when I became pregnant years later, all those fears came back as I was navigating this medical system, feeling and seeing up close first person, oh my gosh, this system is broken. And even this is in the quote unquote best hospitals in the world. This is with the best doctors in the world. And again, this is not about tearing down doctors or the medical system. It's really about fixing what's broken for everyone, including the doctors. I believe in Western medicine and I believe in the necessity of doctors. And I believe that interventions are important when they are necessary, and we need doctors to perform those, but we don't need interventions as much as we're getting them. And there is a place for midwifery care in the larger maternal health ecosystem. So anyway, I know that didn't directly answer your question. I will answer your question. Some of the people that have blown my mind and said yes right out of the gate, Serena Williams is my number one. She immediately said, "You have to talk to my husband about this. He likes talking about this issue even more than I do. You got to get him." And I was like, "I'd love that." So Alexis Ohanian is a funder for us as well. I will say one of the things that appealed to Serena about this work and the way that we're approaching it is that we are absolutely inviting men and dads and partners to be part of this movement. And it only makes sense because no one's more impacted than the partners and the dads who are left to raise their families if the mother isn't coming home from the hospital safely. And so for too long, dads just haven't been a part. Men haven't been a part of this conversation. And so that really appealed to Serena. And that's why she said, "You got to call Alexis," which I did. We also got another dad on board. John Legend is a part of our work. Aisha Curry, Savannah James, who actually I approached her directly. And then after she signed on and she funded our initiative, LeBron actually jumped in and said, "I want to match my wife's give." And so he jumped on as part of our initial founding funders. Ashley Graham, who's another midwife mom, she gave birth at her home three times. One of them is a 2-for-1 because she has twins. She gave birth at home to twins, and one of them was breech. And that's just sort of unheard of. And she talks about how much trust and faith she put in to herself, but also through the support of her midwives and how important it was to have that team and that education and just everything that comes with going through midwifery care, which a lot of people just don't know about, by the way. It's just like a lot of people don't know that it's an option. They don't know the difference. So having these amazing moms on board, including Abby Phillip from CNN, who also had a home birth and who also has been very vocal about it, did a whole documentary on CNN about it in December. Having these people out here telling their positive, empowered home birth stories will hopefully help change the face of home birth and midwifery care for the next generation of moms as they're navigating their decision-making process. And hopefully it's about, we're not about forcing home birth on people or forcing midwifery care on people, but it's really about really expanding people's understanding of their options and the agency that they have to advocate for themselves about the kind of care that they deserve and that they want.
Yeah, and I think that that's like the thing, right? It's really hard to advocate for what you are not aware of. And even from an outside perspective, looking at Birth Fund and doing my research and going through the website, I learned so much. And the same experience that you had becoming aware of Serena's story, the storytelling aspect of it with these really, really iconic people, like stars, if you will, is going to help to build bridges just from an education perspective. So I think that this is like a really, really powerful initiative that you started. And I think that it's going to open so many doors for folks, even when it comes to their own self and empowerment that we all need. Anyone that's had a challenging conversation with a doctor where they wanted to know more, they needed more answers, they needed more resources, more support. It's so hard when you don't know what to ask for, how to advocate, right?
Absolutely. I was so surprised by how intimidated I was sitting in front of these doctors in the most vulnerable state of my life, entering into this chapter of motherhood that I had not researched. I wasn't well educated on. I was surprised by how many questions I had. And I found that my questions were not really welcome. And the system is set up in a way that doesn't really have time to accommodate the level of filling the gaps. Here, we're not taught about birth and all that goes into pregnancy and how to think through a birth plan and all of the various decisions that you can make to help shape and design your birth plan. No one teaches you this stuff. It's on you to figure it out. And a lot of us don't have time to invest in this, and the doctors don't have time to invest in us. It can be a very bewildering and isolating and scary experience. And I think it's important to talk about that because if we don't, I think we're leaving each mom to feel like it's only her going through this. And I will be the first to say, like, here I am thinking I'm a smart woman. I'm a journalist. I know how to do research. I know how to advocate for things that I believe in and myself. But I found myself in a place in sitting in front of doctors, having what I found out later is a real thing. I think it's called white lab coat syndrome or white coat syndrome, where there is this power imbalance. They become this authority figure that you give up your power to. And they often use that power to intimidate and to guide you into certain paths that maybe you're not fully informed about all of your options. And it happens more than I think people realize. And it happens to people like me. I find myself to be confident and relatively smart, but I went into this and I felt so small and I felt so out of sorts. And it really took finding midwifery care to find myself and my strength and my center and my voice and my power again in order to go into birth, trusting myself and my body and what it was meant to do. And it really required a mindset shift, multiple mindset shifts. I didn't even realize how much I had unknowingly learned about these norms, about how you're supposed to give birth, what is normal and what is not normal, what is safe and what is not safe. And so much of the messaging that we receive is actually based on misinformation. I think people think of midwifery as less safe and that they are unskilled. And it's just not true. Midwives gave birth to this nation. What I will say is there's a lot of resources out there to teach yourself, to educate yourself about this. And one of them that I really think every person, man, woman, and other, should definitely watch The Business of Being Born, which is an illuminating documentary that Ricky Lake executive produced a long time ago. It's actually wild how relevant the information still is, but it really explores the medical industrial complex and the business that was built around birth. And it helps you see clearly that the system was set up for profit over patient care. And intrinsically, that's the difference between the medical system and midwifery care. Midwifery care is patient-centered, holistic care that really takes time to get to know the whole person and to understand all the factors that contribute to maternal health, which goes so far beyond the physical. It's about your stress levels. It's about your financial picture. It's about your relationship status.
For folks that are listening that are not familiar, what is the difference between a midwife and an OBGYN?
Okay, so the difference between a midwife and an OBGYN is that an OB operates within the medical system and they are medically trained to perform medical interventions. So C-sections, they give epidurals for pain management, and midwives typically are there to assist in what people call natural births, which I think unmedicated birth is a better term, and they do not perform medical interventions. So they are there to support childbirth. They are childbirth experts, but they don't use medical intervention. And so they are there in the prenatal stage all the way through birth and postpartum. That's another thing. It's a wraparound care model. So in your prenatal sessions, there's a huge difference between the way a midwife and a doctor approaches your prenatal visit. So your doctor, you might get 10 or 15 minutes. And with a midwife, you're getting an hour, maybe more. Midwives sometimes come to your house and they give you care at your bedside. They are focused on your whole holistic picture of health, whereas OBs typically are focused on the baby and the basics, I guess I could say. So it's just a very different model of care. I think that's the best way I can describe it.
And what are some questions that every birthing person should be asking their care provider?
I think every person should be asking their care provider what their intervention rate is, what percentage of their births result in a C-section. Personally, I would ask things like, will you allow me to eat and drink water during labor? Can I move freely throughout labor? Because a lot of hospitals, this is something I learned when I was pregnant, make you think that there is a policy that you have to get an IV put in you as soon as you're admitted to the hospital. And when that happens, you can't eat, you can't drink, and you can't move freely because you have a needle in your arm. It's just a very basic thought. I'm like, if I'm going to be in labor for 12 plus hours, I want to be able to move freely. I want to be able to eat and drink. And that was something that was shocking to find out that you have to work that out with your doctor in advance. And some doctors don't allow it. If you want to have a birthing tub or access to a shower, I would ask if those things are available. If it matters to you that your doctor that you're seeing in your prenatal visits is the same doctor that delivers your baby, I would ask, what's the likelihood that that doctor will be able to attend your birth? The chances of the doctor that you go to see actually being there during your actual birth is way lower than I thought. I always thought part of the process of dating your doctor is to find the person that you're going to do this life-changing act with, and you want to know that they're going to be there that day. But in most cases, that's not something that they can commit to. And so if that's important to you, I would ask more questions. I would push. In some cases, you can pay extra, which is, by the way, that made me feel icky to know that you can pay to play for a better birth experience. I just felt like that's something that should be offered to everybody, but I would explore your options there. And I think really I would ask for the opportunity to ask questions, as many as you need, and really try to see if you can get more time if that's what you need to feel comfortable and confident moving forward with the doctor.
So how does Birth Fund work for folks that are wanting to perhaps be on the receiving end of the support that you offer?
Yeah, so we are actually opening up applications to the public in June. So look out for updates around Father's Day for that. It will be based on what we rate in this season. We are actively fundraising right now. You'll see on Instagram, we have an open fundraiser where anybody can invest in someone's healthcare by donating at any amount. And that will directly impact how many families we have the capacity to support when we do open up applications. So I hope that that's encouraging for people. If you're moved to give, please do. The fundraiser isn't going to be open forever. We actually only have 2 weeks left. It closes on May 10th. So please spread the word. Please get that Instagram fundraiser out to as many people as you can so we can help as many families as possible. First of all, looking at need, we're making sure that there is a significant financial need that we can meet with this grant. We are also looking at people's stories, and they're submitting videos, which are really moving. And we ultimately want to be able to service as many people as we possibly can. We're also looking at expected due date. We want to make sure that we can get people into care as early as possible because we know that that translates into better outcomes. So that's a factor as well. But ultimately, it's a team effort and we're looking at a number of factors. We have midwives involved in the process. Right now, the need is much greater than the supply, but we hope to close that gap over time.
Amazing. So from an outside perspective, it seems like you're really good at bringing big ideas to life. What do you attribute to your ability to get things off the ground? And I'm speaking about everything, not just Birth Fund, because this is my own personal selfish question. Like, how are you doing all of this and bringing these things to life?
You know what? That is such a good question. And I don't really know other than, and I don't mean to give you like a woo-woo answer or for this to sound like self-deprecating, but I am a genuinely faith-based person. And I really believe that these ideas are not mine. I feel like this is a calling, divine calling that I had to answer. I don't feel like this idea came from me. I feel like it was given to me. And I think there's a huge difference in that dynamic. I know what it is to have an idea and then to push it into the world. And I think it feels completely different. The whole process feels different. There's even more doubt involved and there's more ego in a way where you're wondering about how this affects that or how it looks or what people will think. Like, that plays a bigger role typically when it's your idea. But when something is given to you, you're channeling. It's like, I just have to be obedient. I have to get out of the way. And I just have to trust that this was meant to be. And if I don't move on it, somebody else will. So let me just try to do my part to carry this out. And that's really what it has felt like. It's felt urgent. It's funny. Yesterday, we were shopping for a scooter at Target for my son. And my husband found this kid's book called What Do You Do With an Idea? Low key, this book is so deep. And it spoke exactly to what this process has felt like. I highly recommend the book to people out there, even if you are not a parent and you don't need children's books. It talked about the process of what happens when you get an idea. I believe it's a spiritual act to create anything. It helps us get out of our own way. It helps move the ego out of the way and just to really attract the people that you're going to need to help carry it out. Honestly, that's now the only way I ever want to work for the rest of my life. I want to wait on those calls and move with intention, moved with full conviction, because I think the result is more potent. Do you know what I mean?
At the beginning of this conversation, you said that you would never see yourself doing this type of work 3 years ago.
Never, never.
I know this is a very cheesy question, but I've never asked anyone. I'm just curious, where do you see yourself with Birth Fund 10 years from now?
I really don't project into the future, and I'm not a big planner. I just move with what I'm led to do in the moment. I kind of make plans on a quarterly basis, but I think that this has the potential to hopefully change the system. I hope what we will be able to do is expand government support and resources and change our current insurance model to expand access to midwifery care. We can become a really powerful coalition that is successful in not just helping families outside of the system, but changing the system.
Yeah, definitely. Before we wrap up our conversation, I'd love for you to share, like, how can people support Birth Fund and learn more about what you're building with your team?
Follow any of us on Instagram and donate in real time. And I know it seems small, and it also might seem big. It might seem like too big of an ask for some people who don't have any discretionary income, and that's okay too. But if you do, we do ask that you give what you can. And I do think that grassroots model is how you make big systemic change later. You have to help the people while you work on changing the systems. And the system change takes a long time. Right now, this feels like the most urgent, best use of my energy and my time.
That's amazing. I think that's a great place to leave off this conversation. Elaine, thank you so much for your time and energy today. And with that, I'm going to say goodbye.
Thank you, Avery. You're such a good interviewer and your voice is so calm. I would listen to you reading me the alphabet. So thank you for your calm vibes and your great questions.
That is high praise. Thank you.
Yeah, you're good. You're good. This was like my favorite interview. This was my favorite one.
And that's a wrap on my conversation with Elaine. Please go and support Birth Fund in any way that you can. Tune in next week for another episode. And don't forget to rate this episode and leave a comment or send me a DM and let me know what you thought about this episode. So many people have, and I love getting to chat with all of you. As always, this podcast is produced by Liz Gooper and Victoria Christie and edited by Diego Domine. Until next time, keep blooming.